part two. In this part, you will hear three short talks. After each talk, you will hear six questions about it. Before each talk begins, you will have time to preview the questions that are printed in the test booklet. You will hear each talk and the questions once. If you want to, you may take notes in your booklet as you listen. Mark your answers on the separate answer sheet, not in the test booklet. You should mark A, B, C, or D. Do you have any questions? Now you will hear the first talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a speaker at a history seminar.
Hello, my name is Chris Simmons, and we'll continue our exploration of ancient civilizations by taking a look at the Incas, their political and social systems, as well as the Incas' way of life, religion, and language. The Incas were an ancient people of the Americas who built the biggest empire in South American history. Every conquered tribe was ruled independently by a council of its own elders. The tribe gave its allegiance to the ruler, or Inca. The Inca was divine because he was said to be the descendant of the sun god. The Inca civilization built a highly impressive network of roads and farmlands throughout the Andes. This was paid for by a labor tax which conquered people had to pay. With regard to the Inca's social structure, this was very rigid. At the top was the Inca, who was all-powerful. This system depended heavily on centralized authority, and when the invading Spanish seized the Inca and the ruling family, they were able to conquer the Inca territories quickly and easily. Now, let's look at the religious beliefs of the Incas. They worshipped a central god, the sun god, who was considered the father of the royal family. There were many gods among the Incas, but the sun god was the most revered. The Incas also believed that there was a heaven, a hell, and a resurrection of the body after death. The language they spoke was Quechua, which they imposed on all the peoples they conquered. Because of this, Quechua is still spoken among large numbers of Native Americans throughout the Andes. They had no writing system at all, but they kept records on various colored knotted cords. I just want to go back to the building work the Incas carried out. The Incas had to carve up the mountains into terraced farmlands. They were so successful at turning the steep mountainsides into terraced farms that in 1500, there was more land and cultivation in the Andean highlands than there is today. Of all the ancient peoples of the Americas, the Incas were the most brilliant engineers. They were able to fit gigantic stones together so perfectly cut that they didn't require mortar, and they designed huge earth drawings that still exist today. They built roads through the mountains from Ecuador to Chile, with tunnels and bridges. Now, let's look at some examples.
Number 21. According to the speaker, who was the Inca? Number 22. How does the speaker say the Incas financed public works? Number 23. What does the speaker say led to the fall of the Inca? Number 24. What does the speaker say about the Incas' religion? Number 25. What does the speaker say about the Incas' language? Number 26. What does the speaker admire about the Incas' engineering? Now you will hear the second talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a speaker at a geology lecture.
Hello, my name is Juliet King, and I'm a volcanologist, and I've been invited here today to give you some background information on volcanoes. So, to begin with, did you know that the word volcano comes from the Roman god of fire, Vulcan? Well, according to Roman mythology, Vulcan was believed to have had a forge on Vulcano, an active volcano in Italy. The largest volcano on Earth is Hawaii's Mauna Loa, which is about 6 miles high from the sea floor to its summit. The most active volcano in the USA is Mount St. Helens in western Washington. The largest volcano in our solar system is perhaps Olympus Mons on the planet Mars, which is 17 miles high and over 320 miles across. Now, there are many types of volcanoes. A shield volcano is a gently sloping volcano emitting mostly basaltic lava, a very fluid lava, in long-lasting, relatively gentle eruptions. Shield volcanoes can be very big, however, explosions as such are usually minimal. The stratovolcano is a steep-coned volcano that explosively emits gases, ash, and a small amount of stiff silica lava. This type of volcano can have eruptions accompanied by deadly mud flows, which are why stratovolcanoes kill more people than any other type of volcano. As for lava domes, they are bulbous volcanoes that form when lava barely flows. An example is Mont Pelee in Martinique. The cinder cone volcano has steep sides formed by loose, fragmented cinders that fall to the earth close to the vent, and there is usually a bowl-shaped crater at the top. As gas-filled lava erupts into the air, the lava fragments into pieces and forms cinders. The volcano on the island of Santorini in Greece is what is called a caldera complex and is the most explosive type of volcano. This doesn't look like a common volcano. After an eruption, the result is a crater known as a caldera, caused when the area around the vent collapses. Apart from the differing types of volcanoes which I've just described, there is an area encircling the Pacific Ocean called the Ring of Fire. It's called this because its edges mark a circle of high volcanic and seismic activity. Most of the active volcanoes on Earth are located there.
Number 27. According to the speaker, what is the world's largest volcano? Number 28. What does the speaker say is a common feature of shield volcanoes? Number 29. Which type of volcano does the speaker say is the deadliest? Number 30. What does the speaker say is contained in the lava of cinder cone volcanoes? Number 31. What does the speaker say about the volcano on Santorini? Number 32. Where does the speaker say the Ring of Fire is? Now you will hear the third talk. Look at the questions. Listen to a speaker at a space museum.
Hello, and welcome to the Arizona Space Museum. My name is Andy Hodges, and I'm an aerospace engineer. Today, I'll be telling you about the beginnings of modern rocketry. Today's rockets are remarkable examples of human ingenuity that have their roots in the science and technology of the past. For instance, in the 13th century, the Chinese began experimenting with bamboo tubes filled with gunpowder. At some point, they attached the tubes to arrows and launched them with bows. Their experiments led to what was probably the first use of true rockets. All through the 13th to the 15th centuries, there were reports of many rocket experiments. In England, a Roger Bacon worked on improved forms of gunpowder that greatly increased the range of rockets. In France, Jean Francois found that more accurate flights could be achieved by launching rockets through tubes. Jean de Fontana of Italy designed a rocket-powered torpedo that skimmed across the surface of the water for setting enemy ships on fire. Early in the 20th century, an American by the name of Robert Goddard began conducting practical experiments in rocketry. His earliest experiments were with solid propellant rockets. However, Goddard became convinced that a rocket could be propelled better by liquid fuel. The problem was, no one had ever built a successful liquid-fueled rocket before. By 1926, Goddard had progressed sufficiently to build a primitive but practical liquid-propelled rocket, which burned gasoline and liquid oxygen. The world's first liquid-fueled rocket flew on March 16, 1926. The rocket was airborne for a mere 2.5 seconds. In that time, it reached an altitude of just 12.5 meters and landed 56 meters away in a cabbage patch. Goddard continued his experiments until 1929. By then, he had made 4 liquid-propelled rocket flights and attracted a lot of negative publicity. Things were not going well until he got some crucial support. Charles Lindbergh, the famous aviator, became interested in Goddard's work and arranged for a large financial grant to be awarded to him. With this backing, he continued to develop rockets powered by gasoline and liquid oxygen, which reached near supersonic speeds and climbed to 2 kilometers in altitude. By the time his experiments were finally interrupted by the Second World War, Goddard had developed the basic components of a successful long-range rocket. This formed the basis of the rockets which were to later launch satellites and astronauts into outer space. For his achievements, he has been called the father of modern rocketry.
Number 33. How does the speaker say the Chinese develop rockets in the 13th century? Number 34. What does the speaker say about De Fontana's invention? Number 35. How does the speaker describe the rocket Goddard had built by 1926? Number 36. What does the speaker say about the reaction to Goddard's project? Number 37. How does the speaker say Lindbergh assisted Goddard? Number 38. What does the speaker mean when he says,
"He has been called the father of modern rocketry"?
End of part 2.